Okay. Hi, I'm Alex Chambers, and I'm going to be telling you about some work which is detailed in this paper. And everything you see was done in collaboration with my PhD supervisor, Atu, who was the last speaker. So, my title is Non-Gaussian Energy from Preheating. And the questions we want to ask are, can detectable non-Gaussian energy be generated during preheating? And if so, how much? And can we use non-equilibrium field theory techniques to answer these questions? But first of all, I should really say, what is non-Gaussian energy and what is preheating? So, we heard of non-Gaussian energy first. We heard quite a bit about this morning, so I can just skip through this quickly. Gaussian perturbations are entirely described by their two-point function, or equivalently the power spectrum in cosmology, and within observational limits, WMAP, the perturbations in the cosmic microwave background are Gaussian. However, non-Gaussianity, the difference from Gaussianity, might be a useful way of distinguishing between different inflationary models, or inflationary models and non-inflationary models. And we can parameterize non-Gaussianity in the conventional cosmology way by using the non-linearity parameter FNL, which was originally defined using this equation, where zeta is the curvature perturbation on constant density hypersurfaces, and zeta naught is the Gaussian part. But really, we don't have to go too much into the statistics of how FNL works here, because it does get quite complicated. All we really need to worry about is Gaussian perturbations have FNL equals zero. The prediction from vanilla single field slow roll inflation is FNL is very small. The perturbations are very close to Gaussian. And the WMAP results of the latest data put it as FNL is of the magnitude less than 100. However, as we heard this morning, there's been this recent reevaluation of the same data by this group, who have claimed that this is a 95% confidence limit results. So they've claimed that the FNL equals zero is excluded. But I will neither endorse nor criticize that. Perhaps it just says we should take more data. But and this is just a picture of a simulated map with Gaussian perturbations. There we go. So, what is reheating or preheating? So, during inflation, you have the amplitude field rolls down the potential, and this drives exponential growth. Then, if we stay in the same picture at the end of inflation, then the amplitude field oscillates about the minimum of this potential. And so, this represents amplitude particles, and they have to decay. And there are two broad ways that they can decay. Either we have perturbative reheating, where they decay very slowly. We just calculate the decay rate and eventually go away. Or we have preheating, which is explosively fast, out of equilibrium transition of energy between this field and another scalar field. There are several models of preheating, and like in inflation, they all come down to choice of potential. But the two most popular classes are tachyonic preheating, which is where you've got a phase transition, or preheating with parametric resonance, which is what we'll be looking at. So, more precisely, we're looking at preheating after chaotic inflation, which is where you've got a phi to the 4 potential, and then you introduce a coupling to another scalar field, chi. So at the end of inflation, all of the energy is in the phi field, the inflaton field, and then it decays into chi particles. Now, the linearized dynamics of this process were first worked out in 1997 by Green, Kaufman, Lindu, and Starobinsky. And what they showed is that if you take the linear parts of the equations, you find that the amplitude field follows this oscillator equation, which is just the equation for an oscillator and a quartic potential. And the solution to that is like this. And then if you substitute this into the same equation for the chi field, the other scalar field, you get an equation that looks like this. Now, this is the equation for a oscillator with a time, with a periodic mass term. As you might imagine, an oscillator with a periodic mass has resonances in its oscillation. In fact, this is a well-known equation called the Lemay equation. And the solution to the Lemay equation looks like this. So we've got some periodic function multiplied by an exponential. So, and the index in this exponential is called the Floquet index. It can either be imaginary in the white areas, or it can be real, in which case you get exponential growth in the amplitude of the chi field, which is in the shaded areas. And all we've got on these axes are t squared over lambda is the couplings from the potential. And on this one, and on the y-axis, we've got scales. So we've got large scales at this end and small scales up here. So these are just resonance bands in the parameter space. So, naively, in this model, we've got, at the end of inflation, there is an outer equilibrium explosion of where all the energy suddenly moves into another field. And you would think that would lead to huge observable perturbations. However, that's not the case. The preheating can't create observable perturbations on its own. The reason for that is that the horizon size at the end of inflation is very, very small. And because there's no inflation after preheating, it happens at the end, those scales can't be blown up to sizes we can observe today. So instead, what we have to look at is, if during inflation the chi field, the second scalar field, is light, and by light I mean its mass is less than the Hubble length, then that field itself contains Gaussian scale invariant perturbations at the end of inflation. So we could really redefine our questions we had at the start to, can perturbations in a secondary light scalar field at the end of inflation be converted into super horizon curvature perturbations by preheating? And how non-Gaussian are those perturbations? Now, Jochen, our interest in these questions was sparked because by this paper by Jochen and Mazumba, who answered the questions using a semi-linearized analysis of the equations. And they said, yes, this can happen. And the FNL is of the order of 1,000 before if the large scale modes are in resonance. And as you remember, this is outside of the observational limit. And we thought that we should try and redo this, but numerically, and in a fully non-linear way, because towards the end of preheating, this semi-linearized analysis doesn't work very well. So our approach is to dispense with perturbation theory, and instead we use the separate universes approximation, which is being developed over the last few years. In this, we take the universe to be made of lots of little Friedman, Robinson, Walker patches, each about horizon size. And then you can solve the equations within each patch. And the growth of each patch is slightly different from all the others because it's depending on what happens within the patch. And then the curvature perturbations at the end of your process are just given by the differences in the final scale factor between each patch. In fact, so the equations you have to solve for each patch are the equations of motion for each field, the impliton field, the field it decays into, and the Friedman equation for that patch. And this has been done at a simpler level before. So to do that, in those analyses, all they did was they ignored each of the terms that contains a gradient term. So all you're looking at is the zero mode of the fields in each patch. So here are some results from... Yes, so let's imagine for now that we ignore those. So imagine that we're going to bring them back, but we'll imagine that we ignore all of the gradient terms, which was done in this paper. Hey. Yes. See? This is why I'm going to say that this way doesn't work. So So yes, so it contains, so if the instability happens within bands in K, so if you just look at the mode. They're not. I'll come. Yeah, if we look here, if we've got K equals zero, is in resonance for certain periodic bands, and in fact it's the strongest mode, the resonant mode for that particular choice of sample. But anyway, come back. These guys buried the initial value of chi on this axis, and they have the final value of the log of the scale factor on this axis. And all they see is white noise, and that white noise wouldn't add anything to the cosmic microwave background signal. And I haven't got time to do much time to go into this, but then Tsuyama and Yokoyama have come back and looked at this and said, well, maybe this is because there's chaotic dynamics, and only looking at the zero mode isn't very accurate. So there are too few degrees of freedom, and you're looking at too narrow a range in K-space. So what we try to do instead is we take each patch to be a lattice field theory simulation. So we do lots of lattice field theory simulations, which are all co-moving. And instead of varying the initial mean value of the... instead of varying the initial value of chi, we vary the initial value of the zero mode for that patch. So now we're getting the whole of these finite and K bands within each lattice simulation. So we just do a lot of lattice simulations. So we bring back these equations. We have to solve these equations within each patch. And this time, we leave in the gradient terms. Sorry? Yeah. So, at every time step, as the lattice evolves, we integrate over the lattice and find the growth rate as we go along. So the growth is just for the whole lattice, not locally. There's no metric perturbation. I'm not quite sure what you mean. Our patches, our lattice simulations, are co-moving. So with time, so it's all timed, so that H is about, so we've timed our simulations so they're about the same right order. Yeah. Region each simulation. I'm not. I'm not sure I understand your question. I'm sorry. So, as I said, we have to solve these equations with lattice simulation, much like the ones we've been hearing about in the last two talks. So we have a few details. We use the standard way, so there are no defects or cosmic strings in our lattice. Our potential doesn't contain those. But we just populate the lattice with Gaussian initial conditions, Fourier transform into coordinate space, and then evolve forward from there. So, just from one run, here is the scale factor during the run. You can see we've got a bit of inflation and a bit of radiation-dominated era where preheating is happening. In fact, more interestingly, we should look at the dynamics of the fields during the simulation. One of the simulations. If we look at this side, the more interesting side, it's the one for the chi field. The red line, you probably can't read it from there, is the mean of chi, and then you've got the all the inhomogeneous modes, fluctuations, are the black line. And you can see that during preheating, they grow very rapidly. And then once the fluctuations in phi become of the order of the fluctuations in chi, the whole system becomes very nonlinear. The homogeneous oscillations in phi come to an end, and preheating stops, and the system equilibrizes. So this is my first very important plot. This is the equivalent of the white noise plot that we had from Bassett and Tanaka. They had white noise, but here we plot the initial value of the mean of chi versus the final scale factor. And instead of white noise, we can see a signal. We can see a continuous function for small enough values of chi. And what we assume is that this is some analytic function with which we can take as a Taylor series, where the first term is the quadratic term, and that term is the dominant term. So the different value, so this is symmetric. So really, we'd only have to simulate half of this. And each of these points is an average over 100 simulations. So there's a lot of simulations going on in this plot. So symmetric, we just do half. For each different values of the couplings, we can get different measurements of C, where C is just a fit parameter, which in cosmological terms is the second derivative of the log of the scale factor with the initial value of chi. But we want to convert C into FNL, which is the non-Gaussian antiparameter which we want to know about. And to do that, it's very easy for us, because all we have to use is a result by Bubecker and Liff, who showed the FNL is proportional to our C parameter cubed. So we substitute in the relevant power spectra, and we find the formula for FNL, and plug in the number, FNL equals 10 to the 20, which is huge. But really, this formula is only valid up to FNLs of about 10 to the 5. So we're not saying FNL is 10 to the 20. We're saying FNL is large and far beyond the observational limit, which is of the order of 100. So I haven't got much time left, but we can also derive an analytic approximation to get an order of magnitude estimation of what C is by analysing our chi field during one run. And we take the zero mode and inhomogeneous mode to be separate, and assume that everything happens, all the interesting stuff happens when it's linear. So we get a formula for C, and we can plot that on our second important plot. And here, the red line isn't a fit, it's just our order of magnitude estimation for C. And the black points are from our simulations. So we can see that these are the limits for FNL. That across one resonance band, we can see that most of the points are outside of the far outside of observational limits. But either FNL can be very small, there's no contribution to FNL when zero load is not in resonance, or you can see a point just there, just on the edge of the band, where you can get FNLs which are realistic but non-zero. But anyway, I should conclude, since this is a numerical effect, don't worry about it. So we asked some questions, and the answers were, yes, we can create large non-Gaussianity by converting perturbations in a light scalar field into density perturbations. And I think the more important conclusion we should come to is that we can do this using non-equilibrium classical field theory techniques. And although we've applied this to one potential, you could apply it to lots. And this is a good way of making predictions in cosmology for non-equilibrium systems. Okay, thank you for listening. Well, this class of models. So really, we're talking about chaotic inflation. But you could just as easily have the coupling parameters so that they don't fall within the resonance band on the zero mode. You could have the second scalar field not being light during inflation, which many would say is not—it's not even realistic that it should be light. And chaotic inflation is currently disfavored by the Dorney map anyway. But we just tried this class of models because they're the easiest to simulate. it's conformally invariant, so you can keep it inside your box for the longest. So really you should try and apply it to over one. Sorry, that's more.
Yes, I'll make two comments. One is on the cosmological side. When you're using formula for what you're doing here, you're trying to follow a number of e-folds in different boxes of simulations as a function of the initial values of field chi, of the fluctuations of field chi. So you put slightly different number, you get slightly different output. The input in terms of this field chi is varying at the level 10 to the minus 7. It's a very, very small number, and your simulations should be very, very accurate to catch such a small change in the dynamics. You need very high accuracy of the calculations. You have to respect conservation of energy.
We tried more than one algorithm.
You can try to beat it by increasing number of simulations, but you cannot beat systematics this way. There is systematic simulation, you cannot beat it this way. Anyway, in your formula, you assume that number of e-folds is quadratically depends on this variation delta chi. It must be because Lagrangian is symmetric.
Right?
However, this delta chi means all delta chi, all fluctuations. Not only fluctuations inside our visible horizon, but also fluctuations that are accumulated before last 62 e-folds. You mentioned yourself, your inflation is very, very low.
Yeah.
And during all of those times, chi field is fluctuating and building up its fluctuation. And all of those chi fluctuations should enter this formula. Therefore, the formula should be corrected. You have to add fluctuations chi plus those fluctuations which look like a background for our habitat. And this way, you get linear curve, and your effect will be subdominant.
So you're saying that you don't expect the mean for chi to
correct.
Be zero.
Yeah, because what we observe is only a portion of the very big ensemble. And on the technical side, there is a quite delicate situation. We now repeated our calculation, Gary Feller is here, increasing accuracy by factor 100, 10 to the minus 5. So your accuracy, 10 to the minus 3. If I catch the terms from the plot.
So, and which one, sorry?
Delta n as function of
this one.
It's 10 to the minus 3.
Yes.
So we increase it by factor 100. And we also notice that this number of e-fold is a direct function of the equation of state during preheating.
Yes, that's exactly
what I'm saying. There is a reference point when you're counting number of e-folds. You take some point, after preheating stop, and you about several e-folds and stop here. This is a reference point. Okay?
Yeah.
We notice that the equation of state at this point is oscillating. And if you do literally counting of the number of e-folds, what you're catching the face of this oscillation. It's not real effect.
Yeah,
it's a catching the face.
Okay, so I've skipped over quite a lot of technical.
And you have an average somehow over those oscillations. Anyway, what we have so far is effect. We don't see effect at the level 10 to the minus 5, and our trend in delta n is actually opposite, not going down.
We've been doing ball work, and if you notice, I've put a little signs here. Actually, not all of these are negative. You get some positive ones and some negative ones, and it's because of the way, because of the point in the oscillation you catch. Okay.
One last.
Comment: the theory was first was here from
Yeah. I openly say that it is, yeah. So you're saying that we haven't run the simulations yet for n squared phi squared, but you're predicting, you would say you'll predict that you wouldn't see this effect for that, for those models.
I'm just saying that in the model which we have configured, the masses of phi particles are always heavier than Hubble constant, so therefore there are no long-wave fluctuations in them.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, I'm responding to the first question, whether the theories are ruled out. The theories in which the effect of competing were found and were efficient, the theories are still the
Yes, but perhaps even we could just stick in a different, an entirely different model of heating. If we had a good enough computer, we could even stick in the cosmic strings and get results for that. But yeah, we just can't do that many simulations of cosmic strings.
Okay, let's pause and thank Alex.